The buzzer has poured on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get in. There's no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. We are going to solve all the world's problems and talk a little ball in the world's greatest college basketball podcast, or maybe any podcast of any kind. Now, before we get into Hoop D Squared, I'm sitting there watching you call a game the other day, and my man Junior, right at the end of the first half, because we got to get our Junior siding in at the top of the show, right at the end of the first half, Coach Holtman puts him in the game to inbound the ball last second play. And he throws the ball to you on the other side of the court who was calling the game. Now, I just want to know, as a broadcaster slash parent or parent slash broadcaster, when he threw that ball away slash former coach, what was going through your mind?
I thought it was coming at me. I think on the broadcast, whoa! Because I thought it was coming our way based on the angle. I saw what he saw. And, he saw that they didn't have to run the play. He could just throw it to C.J. Jackson. C.J. was going to do what he was going to run the play. And I also said, oh, that's what gets you benched. Look.
But he stayed in the game.
He did. He's in there not to do that. If you want to know the truth, he's in there to not do that. And, if it were in high school and he was living with us, if he does that, he sleeps in the garage and he doesn't eat for 2 days. But not that he's not living with me, he can do what he wants. You know how it is. But, hey, I was pretty proud of him. That's a good win over Indiana, Ohio State. One bank shot away from at least overtime. 10-1. So the obligatory Junior Kade Bates Diop's the greatest player in the world reference. We're in. We're good. We're done.
And Ohio State's a Final Four team.
None of us get the Final Four right. So I went out on a limb, but they look pretty daggone good to me. I don't know that they'll be in the Final Four, but I'll stick with the pick.
How about this? My Final Four sleeper's praying pretty good right now. I don't want to say anything. I'm just saying those Cincinnati Bearcats talking about the state of Ohio. Those Cincinnati Bearcats, good win against Houston. They're hard to score against. They score it easier. I mean, they dropped 80 yesterday. Gary Clark is playing like an absolute grown man. They're getting better point guard play. They're a senior team. That matchup's hard to play against. The Fighting Mick Cronins are looking pretty good. What do you think?
I think the Fighting Mick Cronins are very good. And when the Fighting Mick Cronins drop 80 on folks, things that make you go, the old song back in the day. That makes me go, Hey, let's stay with Ohio for just a second. How about Xavier? What, are they sixth in the country? They went into the Johnnies. A lot of people thought the Johnnies would get them. I think the Johnnies are ridiculously bad. I was surprised that it ended up as a six-point game. But Xavier, Cincinnati, Ohio State, pretty good in that state, my man. Pretty daggone good.
You know, the state of Ohio just in general, I mean, we talk about Indiana. We talk about places that, are good basketball states. The high school coaching in Ohio is good. The kids like ball.
Mm-hmm.
And the traditions in the state are really good. I mean, you just look across the board. I mean, Xavier's got an unbelievable basketball tradition. Cincinnati's got an unbelievable basketball tradition. Ohio State's got a very good basketball tradition. The MAC schools in the state have had success. Basketball in the state of Ohio is healthy. And we think about states that support basketball, whether it's Indiana or it's Kentucky, but Ohio's pretty good.
Let me tell you, I coached in there for 10 years. And I coached in the state as a head coach. And it did not amaze me because I knew it as an assistant. But here's what you have in Ohio. You have a ton of people. Like, there's big cities. There's Cleveland. There's Columbus. Yeah. There's Cincinnati. There's small town. Pickerington, Ohio just puts out players. Another kid, Jerome Hunter, is going to go to Indiana after Caris LeVert. I mean, there's just so many players in that state. And, there is a pecking order. The pecking order is Ohio State, Cincinnati, Xavier, Dayton. Dayton is a heck of a job, man. Dayton, everybody wins at Dayton except for this year, apparently. And then they basically fill the MAC. So I loved the state. The AAU coaches are great. The high school coaches are off the charts. Summer basketball is fantastic. It is a dynamite. You know, people think of it as football. But no. Basketball in Ohio, big time. Really big time.
I agree. Let's talk about, you talk about big time real quickly. Purdue, to me, the world is getting a better understanding, and we're going to have, obviously, Matt Painter on a little later with us. But before we get Matt on and, tell him how good he is and how brilliant he is and how good his team is, we might as well do it just to the listeners. But I watch Purdue, and they play almost in a lot of ways, and tell me if I'm right or wrong here. This is an old school Purdue team with a new school vibe with Carson Edwards. And what I mean by that is they pass, they cut, they screen. They're a terrific cutting team. They don't take bad shots. They attack on opportunity, but then if not, they can play, through Haas. They can play through Vince Edwards. Dakota Mathias either shoots it or moves it. And then every once in a while, Carson Edwards does something in it. You go, ooh, holy moly. I mean, ridiculous. Where he's got that, aggressive mentality, and he's been much more patiently aggressive, like picking his spots. But they've got an old school vibe with a little bit of, maybe I'd say hip hop with Carson Edwards. What's your take?
Oh, I agree. I watch them defensively, and they, Matt, yesterday during their game, they had a pretty interesting thing in the huddle where he was talking about use of hands, read people's eyes, and they don't make a big deal of deflections and all that stuff that wannabe coaches, bring out stats on. They just do it. And the thing I love about Purdue, and I have loved this for a long time, when you go in their gym, the students have a play hard chart where they chart things like charges. They chart things like steals. They chart things like how many times you're on the floor. And it's legit. It's real. It's not fake. It's real. And then as you run out of the building, there's a clock, and the clock says time to play hard. And everything is based on playing hard. Seth, you mentioned cutting. So often cutting now in basketball is a lost art. A lot of guys cut because they're supposed to out of the Princeton-type sets that most people use. Purdue runs old-school motion with ball screens, and they cut hard. If you ever watch another Purdue game, watch from wing to top of the key how hard Mathias or both Edwards sprint to get there. But when all else fails, they throw it to the big fella. And more times than not, when the big fella Haas gets the ball, he delivers it pretty good. Carson Edwards, you mentioned a new school. He splits ball screens with the dribble. He is a lights-out shooter. He's fantastic in transition. I think they're the best team right now in America. I don't think that they're necessarily the favorite to win a national championship. And I'm not sure, Seth, that they are the favorite of all the teams in the Big Ten to win a national championship. I'm not sure that Michigan State isn't the best team in the country if I were going to make a bet on winning a national title, on what they can do and what spurts they have played in. But certainly Purdue, Villanova, and Virginia have separated themselves season long.
You talk about Haas, and I think one of the best things that Purdue does, and as you watch them, they have the ability off of some of their set actions where, Jake just sneezed. But they have the ability off of some of their actions off dribble handoffs. They post and duck in Isaac Haas right in front of the rim. Not off the block, but like right in front of the rim. Like he gets it, and you got to play one side or the other, and whatever side you play, he just catches it and lays it in. And that action is so hard to guard, especially late game if you want to punch it inside. They do as good a job of that as maybe any team in the country. Now, you mentioned Michigan State. I'm going to challenge you on this one.
Yeah.
I'm going to challenge you on this one because I know your philosophy, your feeling for Miles Bridges.
What's my feeling for Miles Bridges?
Your feeling is he has no game.
My feeling is I made him player of the year in the country. I think he is among the best players in the country. That's my feeling.
But tell me what his game is.
Is he a jump shooter? Is that because yesterday during shooting the Michigan 40. State game, every time he made a jump shot or he dunked it, like even the Big Ten Network trolled me because he dunked. Well, I know he can dunk. What's his game?
I think his game is developed. Here's what I think. I think he's he could potentially be
okay. Stop Danny me right Green, there. Not, potentially. No,
Can I finish my statement?
No.
I feel like I'm arguing with my wife. He could be Danny Green with more athleticism and the ability to get to the rim.
Okay, what is he
That's
now?
What he could be.
What's his game now?
Well,
game.
I think he can spot up shoot. I think I think that he can attack you straight line.
Never makes it.
And get to the rim.
Never
except, and always.
Never and always
are two bad words.
When I was little.
Let me finish this. When I was little, my mother told me, never say never and never say always, because those two things never happen.
They never happen. Here's what I saw. And again, I think he's a terrific player, and I think he's a developing talent. I do. I'm not saying he can't. Did I say he can't play? I just said what I should have put it in context, but it was a nice Sunday day, and Goodman had put out how much he loves him, and I was taking a 5-mile walk, and I really didn't have time. I just put it as no game. But here's my deal, Seth. All right. He can run. He can get to the rim. Fantastic. He can shoot the basketball. He's a terrific foul shooter. Does he have a post game? No, not right now. And my thing is great players develop game. Now, is he a straight line driver? Yes. Here's what happened at the end of the Maryland game. And, of course, no Michigan State fan's going to hit me on this. They're just going to hit me on a jump shot. End of the Maryland game, last three possessions. The first possession, end of the clock, Winston didn't even look at him because they know he really can't create. Okay, second to last possession, he gets the ball at the top of the key, late clock, can't create, and clanks a three off the backboard. Third possession, he tries to drive it to his right hand, late clock, and he can't get it over the front of the rim. Now, he ends up shooting a bunch of free throws, scoring points. He's a terrific shooter. Like, I would say his shooting and his overall just running is his game. Like, but what's his real game? And I think for him to be a, like, he could be a Josh Smith. I mean, Josh Smith had a really good career. Shoot a bunch of jump shots, high-volume shooter, bad team. Be athletic, fine. But, you know, Draymond Green, you put him on the right block, game. You put him at the top of the key off of a ball screen step back, game, driving it and finding it and passing it. I just don't see it with Miles Bridges. Doesn't mean I don't think he's a good player. I think he's a really good player. But I thought he would have more game at this point in his career, second year there. Let's put it that way. How's that?
Yeah. And there's the thing. Second year there.
Yeah.
I think what happens is you have all these talented kids and they're athletic and this and that, and we blow them up, because they're productive and they intrigue us and, you know, they're hyped up. And then when they don't just do more than maybe what we expect of them, we almost walk away disappointed. Instead of celebrating what they do.
Yes, I
agree. Does that make sense?
Yes. And if I weren't just taking a walk on a nice Sunday and had more time and put more context to it, I think people would understand it better, which is why I'm glad that you opened it up for me on the world's greatest podcast here so that, you know, they're still going to call me an idiot. I got some pastor. J.R. Stewart, he's a pastor, calls me public enemy.
You love to call out people.
One. I do. I do. I do. Nobody should be able to just hide behind, and particularly when people are like pastors and they call me public enemy number one and I'm to be hated. That doesn't seem fair. That doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem pastoral.
I mean, like, I can't imagine a rabbi telling me that, you know, I'm hated. Would that hurt?
That
would make me feel good. Yeah, that'd be hurtful. So speaking of Michigan State, Cassius Winston's taking a little bit better care of the ball.
Ooh, is he good? He's got game.
Yeah. Jackson is a difference maker, you say?
Yes. Best shot blocker in the history of Michigan State, according to the numbers.
And can guard almost
everybody,
anyone, right?
Yeah. And can I ask you a question?
Oh, you can. You know what? The world's greatest podcast. You can ask anyone a question, and as was written up and mentioned in this glowing review of the show, is that the chemistry is so good that I even have to get stuck with you at 1 o'clock doing your radio show.
Hey, let me ask you this question: if you're coaching and you see a kid like Jaren Jackson Jr., 6'10", it doesn't have to be him; it can be anybody that you know is an okay 3-point shooter. He's not going to beat you from the 3-point line consistently for 40 minutes. You see him out there. There was a kid named Greg Stempen that played at Toledo who was fantastic, played in the NBA. I always wanted him to make his first three against us because then he falls in love a little bit and stands out there a little bit. Did you ever have a guy that you coached against like that? And do you think that of Jaren Jackson Jr.?
I had a guy I coached that was like that. Probably a number of guys. Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, there are games even when I coach or even when I watch games when I see a guy make a shot, and I think that's the best thing that ever happened to the defense, because instead of going where they're different, they go where they're very mediocre. Like, here's my thing, and this is the thing. Like, guys all want to show their range and they can shoot the ball. I don't understand. And look, time, score, ball reversal, step in, I get all that stuff. My thing is, why do guys spend too much time showing people what they can't do as well as what they as opposed to what they do really well? Like, I used to say to this one player, like, I know you can make a three. You know, I know you feel like you have to show people that you can do that, but you know what? There's a lot of guys that will shoot that shot at the next level that shoot it a lot better than you. Why don't you show people what you do that's so different and so unique that makes you so special, that separates you from the people you're being evaluated with? Because if they're going to draft a shooter, they're going to draft the dude that shoots it a whole lot better than you. Does that make sense?
No, that makes absolutely perfect sense. And look, Jaren Jackson is funny. I talk to NBA guys at every game that I do, and you know, everybody says two things to me about both of those guys. Whew, when they say Jaren Jackson, it's almost like universal. Wow. You know, because they can see the talent. And the talent isn't right now shooting a three. It will be when he gets to be a pro and you don't have the restrictions on being in the gym. And you know, and then the other thing that they say truthfully about Bridges is, well, what's his game? Anyway, I digress. Right. But to me,
well, I'm gonna hit you on one thing, all right?
Yeah.
Everything that's, you know, going on at Michigan State and the Larry Nassar thing is absolutely repulsive. It's just hard to watch, to be honest with you. I mean, just watching these women, these survivors come up and talk is just you know, having three daughters and just thinking about that, and it makes me sick, just the whole scenario. And then on top of that, obviously, you have the situation, you know, with football and basketball. The one thing that I guess, and let's face it, my thoughts and prayers are with the survivors, and I'm not defending anyone, but I do think the one area where it's unfair is after every single game, Tom Izzo's being asked the same questions because people want answers. And I understand people want answers. Tom Izzo is going to answer those questions in front of the authorities. He's going to answer those questions not in a court of law, but through a thorough, not internal investigation, but a statewide investigation, maybe a federal investigation. He does not have to, it is not his responsibility to have to answer those questions after a game. And I think that less is more. The less he says until he has his day to answer the questions that he needs to answer and stand up and I wouldn't say defend himself, but just be honest. But I don't think the public forum of a post-game interview or any other interview is the platform. And that's just me.
Having said that, and I don't necessarily disagree with you, but having said that, I don't blame Michigan State alumni. You know, Jamel Hill had an article in The Undefeated. I don't blame them for saying, Izzo, you've always been this upfront guy. Okay, where is it now? Now, I have a family full of lawyers, Seth, and when Izzo made the first statement that got Allie Raisman's mother's attention...
Oh, it was awful.
My brother will tell you, as a lawyer, and my sister is a lawyer. My sister is actually a prosecutor, was a prosecutor.
What happened to you?
I know. I just got the good looks. They both said they blamed the lawyer. You know, they're like, look, there's nothing other than... There's nothing that you're going to say in that's going to help you. And they blame a lawyer for even letting him think he could say anything in that instance. Now, Tom screwed that up, and Tom came back on that. The thing about a post-game press conference, though, I would say this from a public standpoint. If there's nothing to hide, why not just tell us? But the problem with that is... You don't know. Like, Izzo, even though he has a handle on his program, I'm guessing is wondering what he doesn't know went on in his program. And the other thing is this. Here's where I would be a little bit slow if I were people to rush to judgment on Izzo. You know, as a coach, you are you have to report things to your superiors. And really right 100%. Now, I believe this is true, Seth. I believe at Minnesota, even if Richard Pitino wanted to kick Reggie Lynch off, he can't do it right now. So if you have done everything that you are supposed to do in terms of the policies set by your athletic program and in terms of being upfront with the police, then it is a decision of Michigan State and Michigan State fans of simply this. We want if you want everybody gone from the Michigan State culture, like if you say as a Michigan State person, I want everybody who's named in this gone. I want sweeping change in the athletic department, and that includes Izzo, and that includes D'Antonio, and that includes the AD. Then I totally get that. Like, that's your prerogative to
but
say.
But not until the investigation is over.
Well, see, Seth, I can see people saying that from the outside. I can, and I can sympathize with if Indiana had all this going on, and all of a sudden, you know, the basketball coach, the football coach, heck, they've had problems at Michigan State. With the softball coach, the gymnastics, if somebody said to me, I want everybody gone, I would respect that. However, if you want to wait and see what these people have done, you know, what the truth is before making a judgment, then I think you have to wait for an investigation. I think Izzo has to answer every question put before him, not by the media, but certainly by, as you said, the Department of Justice of Michigan, prosecutor, whoever. Whatever investigation there is, and Izzo had better, and D'Antonio better hope against hope that they have done things by the book, because if they have not, being fired may not be the biggest of their problems. And that's how I look at this, Seth.
Yeah, no, and I agree with that. I just don't, anything, my whole mantra was anything that came across my desk, I didn't want my administration to ever have a surprise. That was my whole thing. So I would immediately take whatever it happened and put it right on the desk of the authorities in the administration. And then I would excuse myself. And you know what? That was their area of expertise. And I followed their lead. Now, obviously, I've never had anything like this happen. But, I mean, you know, it's real simple. There's a guidelines. And plus, you know, on a campus situation, you have, you know, we had the Office of Judicial Affairs, which – basically, everyone was treated the same because that was the process that they had at Tech. As this thing comes out, you know, we're going to see, you know, we're going to see what transpires. And but I just think that I understand what Jamel's saying about, you know, he's always been upfront, but this is a little bit different. And I think what he needs to do is he needs to follow the advice of his attorney. And I less is more.
Seth, I said this when I was at Bowling Green. Now, this is in, I got there in 98 to 2007, 10 years. And you can't do this anymore. I told my players, look, I don't care what the university policies are. I don't care. If I catch you with drugs, just a small town, kids look up to you. If I catch you with drugs and I know you've done something with a woman, regardless, not you know, criminal, okay? Regardless of whether or not the authorities, I'm kicking you out of here. But I don't think you can do that anymore. I just think there are certain policies, and schools are so concerned.
Go to the Title IX office first.
Yes, and see, I think coaching has changed, but that was always my thing, and I stood up in front of the team every year and gave the same basic speech about that. But I don't think you can do that now. So I'm with you. When anything came up, and I'm not sure that I had anything. I had one kid get, you know, one kid did something after he graduated, but I just. Hey, the AD, and I never had anything like that, so I don't even know. But I know that I wasn't going to be the investigator, and I always told the campus police, and I always told the local police, who the chiefs were friends of mine, or the people involved were friends of mine. And I just said, look, you do what you got to do. I will never say a word, never interfere, ever. You do what you got to do, and we'll see.
Virginia.
Hmm.
Last night, taking care of business. To me, they're better offensively than people think. Number mm-hmm. one, DeAndre Hunter changes him a little bit. His versatility at 6'8", can play any of three positions. Kyle Guy is playing absolutely as well as he could play. You think about the maturity level. Think about where that guy was last year with, you know, everything was talked about the man bun, but the man bun was kind of a reflection of how he saw himself. you know, he saw himself different maybe than the rest of that culture. And in a lot of ways last year, I didn't think he fit in. I didn't think he understood how to play really. His shot selection wasn't great. He wasn't competitive. He didn't seem in sync a lot of times. A year later, Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, a redshirt freshman in DeAndre Hunter. A year later, you know, you're looking at this team, and I use the word connected, but they are so good on both sides, yet so simple. There isn't a guy in that team that doesn't play to his strengths, and you can see the trust by watching their bench. How's that one for you?
Seth, all they do is make shots, and all they do is make big shots. They score, and you've said this so many times, and you're so right. There's a lot of fun things about winning, and there's a lot of fun things about getting a really good shot, and there's a lot of fun things about defending. It's what basketball is supposed to be, so any detractors can you know what the backside. Seth, they have there, and all you got to do is talk to Tony for 5 minutes, and you understand it. They have there just – what's the right word? A simple teacher approach. Like, it's almost like a gym class approach where everybody gets to participate. Like, he's a teacher. They're the students in his classes, and they just they go out and do their thing. And if you can defend their thing or if you can beat their thing with your offense, and God bless you, go get them. But, God, is it fun to watch, Seth. So fun to watch.
It is fun to watch. Now, let me ask you, West Virginia, Kentucky this weekend – and then Kentucky against Vanderbilt. See, I thought that last 20 minutes against West Virginia, and I had nothing to do with the score and them winning. It sounds silly, but my thing watching that game, and I was right on the baseline. So I was literally right next to the Kentucky bench. Even when things were going south, it was the first time I saw this Kentucky team. The bench was in every play. They were turning it over, and you saw guys saying, let's go, next play. We're all right. You saw Quade Green bring guys together. You saw Jared Vanderbilt flying around and trying to, you know, do something good. Then they come out against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt does play with really good spacing, and they run some really good stuff, and they have got, you know, enough guys they can shoot it, and they play hard, and they had a very good defensive game plan. How Kentucky won that game, I'm still scratching my head. I'd say scratching my hair, but I don't have any. I mean, it was ridiculous. But once again, at the end of the game, even guys that didn't play well, even guys that were not in the game, they were all part of that celebration. To me, that was the maturation of Kentucky. On the other hand, you look at a West Virginia team, and I know, you know, your defensive philosophy on them is, I'm sure after the Kentucky game, they had a spirited practice. And then once again, in that conference, this is a West Virginia team that every single time they travel, they're traveling to another time zone, which I think is brutal. But just like people are trying to figure out how to play against other teams in league second time through, West Virginia is easier to play against.
Well, you know, I've had people tell me ever since the Kansas loss, West Virginia has struggled. I don't know. I've said what I've said about West Virginia's defense. I just don't think they're nearly what we make them out to be. I think you can drive them. I think they're out of position. But you know what? Having said that, let me go to Kentucky for a second, Seth. One of the funniest calls, I did the Ohio State Indiana game. I'm driving back. I'm listening to Bobby Valvano and Bill Rosinski on ESPN Radio do the game, and the kid fouls Kentucky with 2 seconds to go in the game. Right? Bobby Valvano's call as the analyst was very simple. How stupid can you be? That's what the coach and Bobby V came out of him. But here's the deal. Like, you take that foul away. That foul, Seth, that foul. And Kentucky throws up a shot and loses. What are we saying about Kentucky right now?
Disarray.
Yeah.
Couldn't handle success. Right. What's wrong with them? They don't pay attention. Cal's sick because they're making him sick.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, but let me ask. I'm going to ask you a better one.
Yeah.
When you watch that Vanderbilt game, here was my take from the post game college basketball live. Jay Will and Seth Greenberg without a host. It was magical television.
Wow.
But here was my takeaway from that: is that day, that game, the way they played, the way they were not engaged, that looked like a team that could get knocked out in the first round or the second round of the NCAA tournament very easily.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. You know, that's what I'm saying. I'm just saying, man, all right, now, moving forward, you had a great win, West Virginia. You had a very fortunate to win, but you won at home game, all right? Does that propel you? Because I love the reaction. Like you mentioned Quad A Green. Quad A Green's layup and the reaction of those Kentucky kids, they lost themselves in the team at the end of that game in overtime at the end
last
of the
game. Last two games.
Yes, last two. Well, I don't know that they lost themselves in teams in the Vanderbilt game until the end.
No, but I'm talking about they lost themselves in their team against West Virginia.
Yes,
and I was
100%.
Right there. It was incredible, the change of
yes. All right, let me go this route. If they lose themselves into the team from this point on, because let's be honest, teams get made or broke right now. A lot of teams break and they just mail
February,
it in.
February, man.
Yeah.
February.
All right. Let me ask you the other question. If this particular group loses itself into the team, how good can they be?
I'm a huge Jared Vanderbilt fan, and the guy can't make a shot.
Then why are you a fan?
Because he can rebound the ball and initiate your break. He sees plays early. He's a really good passer. He can defend multiple positions. He's got a live wire, and the guy plays with a smile on his face when he's on the court or on the bench. I think he's one of those selfless kids that makes it better, who's great in the locker room, who's electric. And if he was smart, he would come back to school next year, work on his game, and
All right. What do you like?
I like the way he carries himself.
All right. What do you like about Kentucky? Like, how good can they be if they lose themselves into the team?
I think they can be a second weekend team. I don't think they can be better than that. I don't think they shoot it well enough. I don't think defensively.
Beat Wichita State.
Now, I like the idea that they play Kwadi Green and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander together. You know, Hamed Diallo should be better, but he doesn't get it. The guy just does. I mean, he just doesn't get it. I mean, he shows you flashes and does some stuff. I think that Nick Richards is getting better, which is a positive for them. I think PJ Washington, another guy that needs to come back to school, is starting to get it. But I think they have too many deficiencies to get to the Final Four. I think they can be a Sweet 16 team.
Can they beat a team like St. Mary's? If they get matched up in the first round,
could they beat St. Mary's?
Yeah, I mean, would you say they're a favorite?
That'd be a hard team for them to play against.
I know. Wichita State.
I'm not as high on Wichita State because Wichita State doesn't guard the way they used to.
Yeah, I agree.
Wichita State, you know, to me, you know, they need to get back to playing angry. Like, Wichita State, to me, is they're getting by. They're talented, and Shaq Morris is really good, and Landry Shamet's really good. And, you know, I mean, Marcus McDuffie has the potential to be good, but we haven't seen the good Marcus McDuffie this year. I mean, he's been very ordinary. They do have depth. And Connor Framkamp can shoot all that. But those, and when I think of Wichita State, I think of a team that draws a line in the sand. I think of a team that makes it hard to get an easy shot. I think of a team that takes away what you're trying to do. They're not that team right now. Now, maybe they'll be that team, but defensively, they are mediocre at best right now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, so, you know, those are the kind of teams that you may face in the first round, you know, right? I mean, look, you're talking about a St. Mary's team on a 16-game winning streak. So you're going to have to beat a team like that unless all of a sudden they jump up and, I don't know. You know, you jump up and win a ton of games and win the conference, which they could. They could do all that kind of stuff. But, you know, to me, that's who they're going to have to beat, a team like that, to get to the second round. And I think they can, but again, they got to lose themselves into the team. They got to, have to, no question.
And when we come back, we're going to visit with the head Boilermaker, Coach Matt Painter.
I love sports. I just wish they could be with me always. They say you don't choose the app. The app chooses you. It is everything I could ever want in a sports companion. It can stream the games and shows that I love, and it's there whenever I need it. I never thought I could find an app that loves sports as much as I do. Until now.
Download the ESPN app to stream ESPN Radio and all the ESPN networks now.
We'd like to welcome in the head basketball coach at Purdue, a good friend of ours. And I have to first apologize because I know, Coach Painter, you spent some time with Dan Dockage just this week on Monday talking ball and the Boilermakers, and now you're stuck with them again, which really This should be a dockage factor. Like, you should only have to deal with this once a week. So I apologize for putting you through this twice. And, you know, just how was the first interaction with our boy D Squared on Monday?
Oh, it was great. It was great. We actually talked basketball. So it's a good thing. Sometimes when you have to do things, people start, when they want to talk in theory or whatever, we talk strategy. We talk about doubling the post. We talk about a lot of little things that, you know, people have to make a decision. We have a really balanced team. And so, like, when you watch one of our games, like what the opposition does, it's kind of interesting because it's not always what they do every game. I think some coaches, if you get up against, I always use Bo Ryan now since he's not coaching. So there's no lingering effects, but you knew what they were going to do. But could you stop it? That was, you know, a lot of times you couldn't stop it, but they were simple. And he really taught me a lot by competing against him, is because he was setting the standards. But, you know, Haas is so big, Vince Edwards is so versatile, and the rest of the guys can make threes, that people will sometimes, when they play against us, they do things they don't normally do. You know, how they double, if they do double, you know, how they rotate, things of that nature. So that was really a lot when we get on the phone, kind of the gist of that going back and forth. Since since Dan's covered a lot of our games, he sees a lot of the differences that happen and how people react to it and how we react to it.
Yeah, speaking of that, I'm not sure there's a team in the country, when I watch you guys, that posts up their front court player, and obviously Haas is a mountain masquerading as a man, in the middle of the lane better than you guys. Like, you know, a lot of people, they'll duck a guy in off the block and they'll, you know, get it to the top and swing it and try to give him an angle. But you guys run some action where you get that dribble hand off, and off that dribble hand, if the ball is centered, and he is literally right in front of the rim, which makes it almost impossible to guard, because if you get on one side, then he's got an angle and shoots one way, or shoots the other way, you play behind. How much time does it take to get that timing, and how big a part of your offense is that? You're such a good passing team, but – you know, right. To me, that's really unique, and you don't see it a lot.
Yeah, well, one of my assistants, Greg Gehry, he handles the offensive sets and everything, and it's really going into every scouting report. We don't split our scouts. We let kind of do it football. One guy has personnel, one guy has defense, one guy has offense. So we've really worked towards that, and that's really helped us. But the fact that Isaac Haas can get that position, sure, we might run good sets. We have sets to where if you're going to let us catch it from the wing, and we watch it, and we're going to run a lot of those. If you're going to take the wing away, then we're going to try to run misdirection to get him a high-low look. If you're going to hold your low man, we're going to space and screen our own man so we can get threes. He's got it just from category standpoint, and say, okay, here's how you defend it. If you want to switch up during the game, you know, he's got it categorized, just like you see the big sheets and the big panels with the coordinators in football. He has it laminated. He has it all set up. And so we just go to those things. We run a lot of stuff. We have anywhere from 60 to 70 to 80 from out of bounds, side out of bounds sets. But we also have four seniors. And you have to put some time into it in terms of running it. But we just kind of wait until how you're going to defend it. If you're taking something away, we're going to go to the second pass and vice versa. But with all that being said, if A.J. Hammonds can't get a deep position, or Caleb Swanigan can't get deep position, or Haas can't get deep position, those plays aren't, you know, they don't work that way. We didn't run some of the same stuff for Juwan Johnson. We moved him around because he was slender. I wish we would have ran a lot of this stuff for Carl Landry because he was so strong and he could get that position, but we didn't. We were more of a strictly motion four out, one in team at that time. So, but it really comes down to having a quality big guy and then playing off of that.
Coach, Matt Harms, it's interesting watching your team. I want to get into two things. Number one, Matt Harms' enthusiasm is obviously like a freshman. You got these veteran guys. How important is it for Harms that the veteran guys allow Harms to be the way that he is?
Oh, it's great. You know, that's very, you know, authentic. I mean, that's who he is. You know, he's that excited every day. You know, he has energy. Well, I got some guys that are fun to coach, but not every single day in practice are they like, you know, I think it's Disney World. And, he does, like, he's, you know, he's got energy and breakdown stuff and he's ready to go. The thing I like about him is, you know, he's excited to play basketball. Whether we're in practice, we're in an exhibition game, we're in a scrimmage, we're playing Maryland, he's excited about it, you know, and that's real. And so that energy really helps us, and it gives us a different guy. He's more of a diver. He's a passer. He's a runner. He can hand the ball off and, you know, get, you know, you can run stuff with him. Like, and a lot of times when people mm-hmm. listen to that, like, what do you mean you can hand the ball off? There's a bunch of big dudes out there that can't do simple mm-hmm. stuff. They can't do a dribble handoff. They can't go set a screen without, you know, getting a legal screen. So he's great to run stuff with. You can slip him. You can fake handoffs. He can get to the basket and dunk the ball. And so, just a very, very functional player.
You know, he scored 3 buckets, I believe it was in a row. Maybe there was something else in there. And he did it 3 different ways. Correct me if I'm wrong. He faked a handoff. He right. slipped the screen, and then he did something else. You know, I had a friend that played with Ken Griffey Jr. late in Griffey's career, and he would make fun. Not make fun, but dissuade a younger player getting out early and doing enthusiastic things. That's why I asked the question. Your veterans seem to kind of embrace him, but he is a guy that, I mean, that's a sixth man of the year. He affects the game immediately in both ends and with his enthusiasm.
No question. And, you know, he can change some shots. You know, he blocks shots, obviously. And he just does a lot of little things, you know, for us. But he knows what's going on. Like, he came into our practices last year in late December. And then I started talking to him about motion and getting into stuff. I'm like, yeah, you know, he'll get this, you know, going into next year. We're going to have a little bit of time and he'll get this. And after like 3 or 4 days, he's like, Coach, I get it. I understand what you're saying. Don't worry about it. If he tight curls, I raise. If he slips out in back cuts, I raise. If he straight cuts, I get away and get to the rim. He just started like repeating everything I yeah. said. And then all of a sudden it was like, hey, hold on here. Like anytime guys are that way, Brad Miller was that way. Brad always kind of, Bruce Weber always talked about it. He called, Brad always looks like he's not listening, but he goes, he's listening and he gets it. And you only got to tell him once. And it kind of like resonated with me at that time. And like, when you tell him something, you better be right, first of all. But you only got to tell him once, but don't, he just wants the answer. And sometimes he thinks he has the answer. And I'm going to say, hey, you might be smarter than me, but you don't have the same experience. So when I'm talking, make sure you're listening. And right as he kind of got on that page, man, he absorbs everything. And it really helps, because when you get those guys that play 10 to 20 minutes and they sub in, when now when you're hiking your IQ and you're really helping things out there on the court on both ends.
You know, Matt, you know, it's basketball is an interesting thing, because you got, you know, when you first took over for Coach Katie, you had that great recruiting class and those guys were kind of your guys. You spent the time, actually as much time recruiting them as an assistant. So then when you had them as right. as the head coach, I mean, they bought into everything you were teaching. And then you guys had a little hiccup. I still remember sitting with you in Las Vegas. I was coming in. This was after I got whacked. And you were checking into the hotel for one of those events in July. And we were talking about culture and just saying, you know, I got to mm-hmm. get my kind of guys. And you've got your kind of guys right now. Explain to maybe people what that means to have guys that really you can connect with, that believe in what you're doing, so that your locker room's right, so that they're allowing themselves to be coached. Like, people think, well, you just recruit a guy and you're going to coach him. It's not always like that, right?
Right. Well, I think a lot of things, I see the guys that start off, and we were really bad our first year, but we had 2 really good players tear their ACL and sit out. So David Teague and Carl Landry. So when I see the guys come in to the Big Ten like now and they start, you know, who are your horses? You know, who are your guys you can lean on right away that can carry you? So getting off to a good start before we sign Etuan Moore, Juwan Johnson, and Robbie Hummel is really what, you know, Coach Katie left us. You know, he left us David Teague and he left us Carl Landry. And you got a first-team All-League guy. You got a second-team All-League guy. You know, and so that, it's so hard to get started. It just is. And so, you know, kudos to what, you know, Coach Katie did and helped. That helped me more than anything, is because we went to the NCAA tournament and won a game before those guys that we mentioned showed up on campus, before Hummel got here and Etuan Moore and Juwan. So for us, that was great. And then we were able to kind of sign 2 guys that weren't highly recruited that were great for our program, Chris Kramer and Keaton Grant. And so now we had a foundation of those 2 guys that were sophomores when those guys came in, and that was great. And so then we went to 6 straight NCAA tournaments and then didn't go to 2. And now we've been to 3 in a row, and then this year will be 4 in a row. So it'll be 10 out of the last 12. So, but the culture of everything, it's hard to get big guys. We're fortunate that we've gotten big guys. So if you're sitting there and you just have a criteria and say, hey, this is what I want in terms of my culture and the type of guy that I get. If you were drafting players when you're in the NBA, I think you can get to that. I really do. Now, you might not take the most talented guy to get to your culture, and you got to live with what, you know, your decisions are. But in recruiting, it's different. I mean, you get told no so much. So you're like, okay, I want this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, because they fit. Well, none of those guys like you, and you're not getting them. So tough. You know, but can you go, and Dan's talked about this all the time, about P.J. Thompson. You know, can you take P.J. Thompson? You know, can you take Ryan Klein, Dakota Mathias, and those guys? To me, like, those guys became like stars in my eyes after going through a couple years of people not listening to me. Like, it was like a P.J. Thompson was like, made so much sense to take him, but yet I didn't try to take him in the fall because I had to go through that and to see. Sometimes you got to relearn things. Like watching a movie and you've seen it a couple of times, but you're like, hey man, how does this end? I've watched this movie twice, but how in the hell does this end? Then it ends and you're like, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember that. But here you are and you've coached guys like Hummel and you've coached guys like Keaton Grant. And you're like, man, these guys are great. But then all of a sudden when you go out and recruit, sometimes you kind of get away from it because, hey man, he's fast and he's big and he's this, but they're not guys that are about winning. And I think that's what it gets down to. Like Dakota Mathias, Vince Edwards, they're about winning. And it's hard to figure that out. But when you kind of see it, sometimes it's hard to explain. You just know it when you see it. And that's what we have to keep doing. But it's a hard thing. It's not something that's just easy as, you know, one, two, three. When you go out, you've got a lot of things out there, you know, in our landscape of college basketball recruiting that's hard to navigate through to find the guys that, you know, help you. I know getting guys that don't turn it over that can make threes, you know, getting that skill level and making your free throws, that's definitely going to help you.
Man, I love talking ball with you. Hey, last thing. You had to be convinced to take Carson Edwards, did you not?
Not really. Issue was, someone said that you said on the – here was the story. We had a kid that was committed to us, that C.J. Walker, that ended up going to Florida State. And it was one of those deals where he commits to us in October – we know in January he's going to decommit because we hear it from everybody else. So I kept trying to get the kid, hey, man, if you're going to decommit, just tell me. No big deal. And he told me a couple of times on the phone, no, coach, I'm not going to do that. Then in March he does it. So it was one of those deals. Now we got to pick up the pieces. That's a hard thing when you get a guy committed and then they decommit from you. It's not the fact that you lost him. It's like, where do you go, especially in that position? Like, you know, you need a lead guard. You need a point guard. It's an important spot. And so we were able to pick up that recruiting in the spring with him, and we watched him in AAU. I actually went and watched him in a shooting workout at his high school in the spring. So I liked him. I liked the fact that the ball went in the basket or whatever. The one thing I didn't at that time was like, is he a point? That was only I knew he was good enough. I know he loves basketball. Carson Edwards is a workout guy. He loves basketball. He loves shooting. And if you watch this play, but he's a really, really talented guy. That was the only thing. He was a smaller kind of two, but I don't get caught up in that. People are like, I don't worry about them. They got small guards. I want quality guards. I don't care if you're 6'6" or 5'6". If you're quality, a little guard from Miami. You guys seen Miami play?
He's great.
I love watching him.
He's good.
Yeah, I love watching him. He's a basketball player. He's tough. He's about winning. And so when you get guys of that nature. But no, I didn't have to be convinced. It was just a short window in terms of, you know, you recruit a kid from Indianapolis or Fort Wayne, you know him since they're 13, 14 years old. And you got a feel for him. You know the people around, say, hey, he's a great kid, he's a great student. But when you recruit somebody from far away and it's a short window of recruiting, if you recruit him for 2 or 3 years, you know, you get down there, you build relationships, you know what's going on. But in a short window, sometimes it's hard to know, hey, I can see he's good enough. I can see he's talented enough, but is he our guy? So we were fortunate to get him. We were in there with Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt took somebody else and just kind of right place, right time, got him on an official visit early, and we're able to get it done. But, no, I've always liked him.
Man, I just say good, stuff, man. On the broadcast. I don't really worry about facts.
Just filling time
when you're up 30 against Wisconsin. God dang, you're up 30. What am I supposed to talk about? Delta High School? What do you want me to talk about?
Unbelievable. Hey, Matt, well, keep it going. Your team is as fun. We talk about you guys every week because we like the way your team plays. And if our teams played like that, we'd probably still be coaching.
Thanks, Matt. Right. Thank you, my friend. All right, buddy.
All right.
Well, we really do appreciate Coach Painter spending some time with us. This is going to be a little tradition for Courtside, the world's greatest podcast on anything and everything, including college basketball. But, you know, we're getting February to start to think about the NCAA tournament. So we're going to do a little buy and sell Gabe, you got some teams that we need to look at and see if we're all in or all out in this moment in time?
Yeah, what you guys think of Gonzaga, buy or sell?
I'm buying. I like Jonathan Williams. I think Perkins is a bit of a front runner as a shooter, but I'm not mad about it. I had a chance to watch them when I thought were playing really, really well out in Portland. And when they're playing well, they can beat anybody. I don't know about anybody, but they can beat most teams. So in terms of a second weekend in the NCAA tournament, I'm buying it. I think we should preface everything by saying, well, you know, it depends on the matchups. I get all that, but as a talent, as a group, I'm buying Zags.
Yeah, I'm buying them also. My concern is their backcourt. I mean, Perkins can make shots. Silas Melson, sometimes I'm not sure how confident he is, but you know, they've got pieces. I mean, like, I love Williams. I think Tilly's getting better. I think Rui is an interesting piece, and he shows signs of doing some really good things. And I think Mark Few, you know, gets his team. He really understands his team, and he's always, quote unquote, tweaking his team and trying to figure out ways to get his guys in a better position. So I'm buying them as a second weekend team. They're not a Final Four team, but I think they can get to the second weekend. I'm not sure they're even an Elite Eight team, but, you know, second weekend's not bad. Mm-mm. Shoot, I tried to get to the first weekend.
Me too.
All right, next team up on our list is Xavier. Buy or sell, guys.
I like teams that make shots. I do. I like teams that make shots. Give me teams that make shots. You know, Trayvon Blewett, I've been watching him make shots since he was a pudgy, like, 12-year-old here in Indianapolis. And Makura is a tough dude. Now, the one thing that I also like about them that I don't think can be ignored, Seth, I think they have a chip on their shoulder. I think they play with a real edge, and I think Makura is the guy that does that for them. So, you know, we can't have 20 teams in the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. But
we can get 16, big boy.
Yeah, and I think, you know, going on a limb, and I don't even know that it's a limb because, you know, let's be honest, they're 20-3, and in the RPI, they're third. But I'm buying them big time. I like their toughness. They just ground out an ugly, ugly game up in Queens when Gooden and Paul Scruggs, a freshman, were pretty good in it. So give me that. Give me Xavier. Give me Xavier going to the Elite Eight.
See, J.P. McCure is a guy that you love to coach if he's on your team.
Yeah.
You absolutely despise him and think he's the biggest A, yes, you know what, in America if he's on the other team. But he is who he is. I mean, he's a winning player. And I agree with you on Blewett. I think the thing that makes him interesting is they got three big guys, and they're all different. They're absolutely all different. And I think the versatility of their front court, and I think Chris Mack's a really, really good coach and a very good tournament coach.
I think
I got him second weekend.
I think he coaches.
And they should be. Oh, they only got three losses.
Right. Yeah.
All right, guys. Next one and last one of the day is USC, Southern Cal.
I'll let you go first on them because I have things to say.
Here's the deal on USC. Look, they're in the middle of this FBI investigation. They just had to let go of their coach. It's ongoing. They lost Anthony Melton, who I thought was their glue guy, their best defender, the ball mover. Having said that, they got pros. They got big pros. They got skilled pros. Shisemi Metu and Benny Boatwright, those guys are good. Elijah Stewart's good. Jordan McLaughlin's good. This is a hard one because it seems to me, because you get seduced by their talent, but it seems at the end of the season, they never really embrace that talent. So I'm selling. I'm not buying these dudes.
I'm not either. There are certain teams that, I don't know, what's the right word? Underachieved? Not even underachieved. They're just kind of, they're hard to like. Let's put it that way. They're just hard to go. Ah, yeah, I can get behind that group. Like, I can get behind Texas Tech. I they play hard. They do all those things. But I thought ever since the coach went in there and made himself into John Wooden after two wins in the NCAA tournament, I just haven't, you know, they haven't been my cup of tea. However, coach, they are scoring at a high number.
They could score.
Yeah, and they are 8-2 in the league now. I mean, I know they have a big weekend this weekend. They got UCLA, and then they got Arizona State both on the road, and then they go to Arizona. So I get it. But they have big seven days here. I get it, and these 7 days will determine a lot, but I'm not buying.
Two great minds.
Yeah.
Think alike.
Yeah.
D squared.
Yes, sir.
Where are you hanging out this weekend?
Oh, man, I'm a home game. I'm in Bloomington. Michigan State comes into the Assembly Hall. I think Michigan State's playing the best at times of any team in the country. Indiana is not, but it'll be raucous.
So now, do you get the you hate Indiana visit? And you hate Michigan State, so like you're hated by both teams?
Yeah, oh, I'm hated big time by Twitter world of Indiana. But when I go to Indiana for games, it's the Indiana fans are so great to me. Incredible response when I go there. But yeah, the Twitter guys tell me I hate them. But the real people of Indiana, they love them some Danny D. Michigan State, everybody but the coaches hate me. And that was up for grabs a year ago. But now
I think you're bad. I think there's kumbaya coming. I'm going to play Henry Kissinger, and I'm going to make cradle kumbaya.
The fans.
And by the way,
yes,
the hardest thing about you when you go to Indiana is that you have all these kids come up to you of gals that you dated in college, who made a good decision and married someone else, and said, "My mom said she dated you." I said, and I'm sure you said, "Well, that was a nightmare."
I say, "Welcome to the club, baby. When you look like this, you know what I'm saying." No, actually, we all just used to hang around Alford because Alford was a, you know, he got the he was popular.
Yeah, he's big. We're gonna be in Austin, Texas. Actually, leaving today. And that's going to be kind of tough. Texas coming off a loss, very tough game at Texas Tech. But, you know, also, you know, with Andrew Jones fighting leukemia, I mean, you just think about that. It's just, you know, a young person that's so vibrant. I saw him the week before he was diagnosed. And that, you know, to me, that's going to be just, you know, talking about that. When you talk about young people that are battling that heinous disease, it's just really, really hard to even put your arms around. And they're playing against an Oklahoma team that, you know, Trae Young, the show continues. What he did this past week was incredible. And now we get to see it up close and impersonal. So have a great weekend.
I think that I talked to it almost for the first game I ever did. Trae Young beat out me talking about my son during the game the other day. And that ain't right. That ain't right.
Yeah, that's one of the great upsets of all time.
Yes, it is. Thanks, everybody.
Tell Junior to throw the ball to the right team so he doesn't put you in that position again, all right?
Throw the ball. If you're wearing white, throw it to the white. If you're wearing gray, throw it to the gray. Don't throw it to Pops.
Exactly. All right, man. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.